you really need government behind it. It's not just even sufficient. It's not just even sufficient to have senior public servants behind it, or senior, because that's we did have senior public servants sitting on the committee that that jury that we ran around. We asked the question: how should the South Australian government address childhood obesity and overweight in South Australian children? And we had, I don't know, half a dozen senior public servants sitting on that committee, and all of them lost their jobs 3 months before we finished the project.
It's a thing.
So that was very disappointing.
But I think the other thing is that you kind of have to bear in mind where in policy making does the views of informed citizens actually sit, because the process by which a policy idea becomes legislation or a policy setting within a government, you know, framework is really quite complex, and there's so many pieces moving there, and this is just one of them. So even with all the right people in place and the government on board, unless they have, like you had, the Premier will at least put this into the policy process directly. These recommendations become part of Hansard. That makes it hard to completely ignore them. You can still completely ignore them, but if you have that commitment. So I think that, you know, I wouldn't want a group of citizens, which I think is how this group is coming together, to be dissuaded from the idea that there is real value in deliberating about policy questions and providing your thoughts to government. But you need to think about it in the context of this. It then becomes kind of a tool for persuading government to take up the policy positions that you are trying to pursue, I think. So, and for what I said before, because there is, to me, there is real value in citizens having a say, and citizens having a say in an informed way. And I think in a world that's becoming increasingly polarised, bringing together people who otherwise wouldn't ever encounter each other and certainly wouldn't have the time to carefully consider an issue that's divisive and come to some kind of, like Gail said, the essence of deliberation is that you come to a recommendation you can live with. You personally don't have to love it, but you have to be able to live with whatever it is that the group has decided. And I think there's something really powerful about that.
And that happens in every jury that I have run. That consensus happens. Now, occasionally you might have people that dissent from that majority, but it's always just one or two, and it's rare, I would have said. Normally, there's consensus.
Yeah, and I mean, so
by the time you get to the end,
so as the process has made sure everybody's views are able to be heard, and if there's dissent, that can be, you know, surfaced and aired and discussed and recognised and acknowledged. But yeah, I just think there's something very kind of valuable about consensus. That's different to a party comes up with a position and you vote for that party or you don't. And, you know, they might have policies you don't really like, but overall you're going to vote for them. This is sort of different to that.
I do think that, I mean, I agree, you need power, which is basically what a mandate is. And it was extremely helpful to have, across that entire suite of policy and the programs that underpinned it, to be able to say, and you didn't even have to say it, people knew that the Premier was interested in this stuff. And so on a whole range of engagement initiatives, having that remit, that mandate was helpful. But, you know, mandates come and mandates go, and if you want to make sustainable change, you actually have to be collaborative, and you have to move into the space where you're providing something of value. So as a group of citizens wanting to establish a jury, say, or a process which brings other citizens into it, it's about what are you going to choose as the topic, because government has a particular agenda, it's running out a whole series of policies that are kind of decided way a couple of years ago. How you choose that topic, you need to choose it so that it's, if you like, on a rising tide. Nobody is, you know, how you frame that topic is really important. And getting what a jury, you want the jury to be successful, so you have to define the parameters of what the discussion is going to be. It's no point in having a jury on some peripheral issue that government is not interested in at all, because and there are a set of dynamics. Now, how would you get to that? You would engage as citizens with your departments. I mean, I don't know. Is that what the group's doing?
I certainly did. Yeah, with my research.
Exactly. So, you know,
absolutely.
I think, you know, helping, working with the bureaucracy, if you like, to define what the topic is. What is the scope? Where do the recommendations, you know, it's a lot of the recommendations that came back with an education program as part of the set of recommendations. Now, you know, there are different agencies, and that's the other thing about juries is, there are different agencies looking after different recommendations, and quite often those agencies work together, sometimes more successfully than other times, and you need to find the lead agency or who has responsibility for the area. So if you want to have something on, I don't know, what's a topic one might have a jury on, can't think of one. But say it's in changing legislation. There will be a set of recommendations that are about the legislation, but there will also be other recommendations which fall into the remit of other agencies. So, for example, an education program is a common one that comes out of juries. You need to engage with the Department of Education if you want that to actually happen, because otherwise it's just going to sit there in the Justice Department.
It is really interesting how often juries say we need more education on this topic.
Because it's a common one.
Almost every jury I think I've done, one of the recommendations was we need more education on this.
And the reason for that is because they can see, having been informed, having had the benefit, they can see what the issues are, and they want the broader community to be aware of that too. So, yeah.
But I think you're really right, though, about the kind of feasible questions.
Yeah,
so I think one of the things that's really important is that the question does actually sort of attach to a decision that could be made. So when we were doing the one around vaccination, we didn't allow the jury to deliberate about whether vaccination should happen or not, because there is a national vaccination program. That's a decision that's already been made. It would have been misleading to have the jury deliberate about something that we knew the government would not take any notice of at all, because that decision has been made. That's not to stop individual people from choosing to be vaccinated or not, but as a program, as a policy, that was not part of what we needed to know. So we said we know that there might be different views, but that's not the question for today. Don't worry about that, because it won't help you. And I don't know whether you constrained your juries in the same way or delimited the question
is. Yes, we did. Yeah. Just very clear about what the question is and try to keep people on topic, you know, not go off in tangents. There's no point then, as you say, there's no point
like
discussing.
If there's absolutely no chance of that being a policy that's going to be adopted, it's a waste of all of those people's time. And even if they're being compensated in some way for being there, you don't want people to spend their time, their effort, their energy, their heart worrying about something that we can't hope to change. But I think the other thing is, for me, juries in particular, deliberative processes are a little broader in my mind, but juries are particularly good for questions that are ought questions. What ought we to do? So they
What should we do?
Yeah, they almost always have an ethical dimension. So like you said, service delivery, not really a jury question. And it's an intensive process, whether you have the luxury of 8 meetings and months or you have to do a little bit more of a, we're going to have one or two meetings over two weekends. You don't want to do that for something where there's other well, you know, well-developed processes to ensure that, you know, customer journeys and consumer input or whatever has been taken into account. You really want it around what ought we to do, what should we do about this, where there isn't a right answer. No, different answers could be equally good, but we need something that the community, represented by the people of the jury, are all willing to live with.
Yeah. So I realise it's 6:40, nearly, we've only got like 15 minutes left, or just over, and I just want to, the third question we were asked was, what are your key messages for us to consider if we want to use citizens' assemblies in South Australia? And I think we've made it very clear that this is expensive, it's costly to do, both in citizen time and in terms of dollars, because you need to pay people to turn up, because if you don't, you get a skewed group in the room. So it's quite expensive. You need to have a good facilitator to make sure that that everybody gets the say. So you want to make sure that it's well run, that it's a good question. You want to make sure the recruitment is really good, that you've got a good process for your recruitment. Don't recruit through social media. It's a disaster. You also want to exclude, you may want to exclude some people with vested interests. I mean, I was just thinking, supposing you ran a jury around how should the South Australian government manage the parklands, for example. If you asked that question, you would not want a developer who wanted to build a high-rise on the parklands in your jury. So,
but you would want them on the reference group.
Yeah.
You would want them on the reference
group. Or as an expert witness.
Or as an expert witness.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. It's about seeing all sides of the picture.
Yeah. But you certainly wouldn't want them sitting on the jury.
Yeah.
Then I think, what else do you think?
Well, I think facilitation is really important, and I think that it's quite a specialist.
It's not any old facilitation. It's deliberative facilitation.
Yeah.
It is really.
It is so very difficult to do. Like,
and to do it well. You know, to be particularly if you are a little short of time or the group is larger, that capacity to rapidly build rapport and ensure that all of these different people are provided with kind of mechanisms to be able to engage with each other quickly. It is a really specialist skill, and when done well, it's like, so you were saying you're glad that you do walking now, and but actually being part of juries, it's fantastic.
It is good.
Like, if you've ever been in one, yeah, you're nodding. Yeah, if you ever get invited to be part of one, say yes.
Because
it doesn't
fabulous.
Matter. It doesn't matter what the topic. Like, you, did you come along to our concessions one, Sue? Yeah. Now you go concessions. Ooh, that sounds like way so exciting. But actually, it was really fantastic. Yeah, and so much interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just, it's just that great opportunity to really delve deep, almost sort of under the lid of how policy gets made, and feel like your views might be able to have an influence. So, yeah.
So I think we can throw it open to questions now, if anybody's got a question.
What triggers government or somebody to start a citizen's jury or some sort of process? Who triggers it? When do they
okay, can we just say the sentence again, say the question again? What triggers?
What triggers, say...
No, I'm just saying it for the purposes of the...
What triggers state government to...
And
is that just an end that they triggered? Is that a policy question that they're having trouble with? Is that what triggers it? I'm just curious as to what actually starts the process.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in Gail's kind of reflections, but I'll just say from where I sit now... and I think, you know, the legacy of the work that Gail's unit and the Premier's leadership at that time really did, you know, your say still exists, and I think you guys built it, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of kind of community engagement is very well accepted. I think citizens' juries after the the nuclear one maybe had a little more of a bumpy ride in government. That's my impression, that there was a bit of ooh, and as well, of course, governments change, etc. But it seems to me now sometimes citizens' juries are sort of viewed, you know, as part of just a suite of things. You could do a focus group, or you could do a survey, or maybe you could do a citizens' jury. And I really hope that that isn't happening very much, because it's not going to be the right way to go about it. You need to do it for the right reasons. But I don't know, like, what's been your experiences?
I am finding that people are doing juries. Well, one, people are doing juries on topics that shouldn't have a jury. But also that it has become, like, people see it as a qualitative research
methodology. Yeah.
And it's not. It's out of a completely different basis. You know, the basis of it comes out of deliberative democracy. Yeah.
So where we've done it with government, the one on concessions, well, that was separately funded, and we were working alongside government and kind of said, here's some stuff you might like to consider, but we were closely involved with the process. With the food security one that we've done more recently, we kind of did that for the government, so they were paying, and we said, look, we think this is the way you need to involve people with lived experience in this instance. Can't have a food security strategy and not actually talk to people who know what food security feels like, and they will have the answers to what we need to do, so let's have a process that brings them into it. As I say, we're yet to see exactly how that lands in terms of what the government will do with it. So in my experience, there's a bit of, you know, it's getting driven, but I think that's a real question to ask DEMCO, because they are the people that do a lot of this in the state. They get involved in lots of processes that are a kind of a sort of expanded community engagement, if you like, where deliberation is useful because the topic is contentious enough, I think.
And you can do things like kitchen tables, for example, where you just...
you can. I think, I mean, what triggered, to answer your question, what triggered in my experience was... quite a sophisticated, I think, but then I would, because, you know, this is my bag, right? Understanding of democracy and, by that premier. And so it was his personal commitment and interest. He had a number of them. One was sustainability, the other one was early childhood and democracy. So there was an interest in exploring this, but it was part of a bigger piece of integrity in government. And if we look across the world now and we see what's happening in a post-truth world, integrity in government and having defensible policies. So when Jay came in, he came in after Mike ran, and there was a whole sort of change in the department, which was, it's no longer announce and defend, which was the approach and still is to some degree in government, governments generally. You know, we'll cook the policy up and then we'll go and we'll announce it and then we'll defend it and you will like it. And so he wanted to pull that back and have a different approach, if you like. And he was, I suppose, enough of a thinker to understand and work with the department on it, that you do juries on issues that are polarising in your community. So, you know...
Cycling.
Nighttime economy, nuclear waste. Cats and dogs, you wouldn't think that would be... I only did some of the design work on it, but... another one where the jury came up with a very practical solution. You know, there was a group that wanted all cats and dogs, you know, immediately neutered or de-sexed. Yeah. And then there was another group that was like, no, this is a cost to community, you're discriminating against poor people, blah, blah, blah. The jury came up with the recommendation that... cats and dogs should be de-sexed, but only, you know, when they're registered. And there was a whole kind of buy-in from the community around it. Yeah. So, and it would only be new dogs coming on board. So it would, the idea was that if you can't afford to de-sex your cat or dog, then you really can't afford to have a pet. So it wasn't existing, wasn't grandfathered, if you like. So it goes down to a personal awareness from someone in power. But I mean, one of the juries that happened in we're running out of time.
Yeah, and I've got a question over the back here.
One was about from the Melbourne City Council, and they did it on should we increase the rates. So they wanted their community at a local level to understand that there is a compromise, there's a trade-off. You don't want to pay more rates? Well, then which one of these lovely services that we deliver to you would you not like to have? And that, I think, was that's quite a good reason for a politician or a bureaucrat to get involved, is to share that pain